This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Plan B, also called the morning after pill or emergency contraception, has been available by prescription since 1999. Plan B is actually two pills. They contain the same ingredients as birth control pills. And when the pills are taken within 72 hours of sex, they are quite effective in preventing pregnancy. In 2003, Bar Pharmaceuticals, Plan B's maker, tried to get the FDA to allow Plan B to be sold over-the-counter. FDA advisory committees looked at the issue and voted 23-4 to allow over-the-counter sales. But the FDA ignored that recommendation, citing concerns about the effect that selling Plan B over-the-counter might have on the sexual activity of teens. The drug maker came back with a plan to have the drug sold over-the-counter only to women over 16. And now, nearly 2 years into the debate, the FDA has yet to act. In late August, they announced they had made no decision one way or the other and instead opened a 60-day public comment period. The FDA's failure to act on Plan B prompted the agency's director of women's health, Susan Wood, to resign in protest. In an email to colleagues, Dr. Wood said, quote, "I can no longer serve as staff when scientific and clinical evidence, fully evaluated and recommended for approval by the professional staff, has been overruled." So what happened? Why did the FDA decide not to heed the advice of its own advisory committees? Some say the agency buckled to political pressure from social conservatives who are opposed to contraception or who view Plan B as causing abortions. Did ideology trump science in this case? Or does the FDA have legitimate reasons to keep Plan B from going over the counter? That's what we'll be talking about this hour. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. We welcome your calls. What do you think about Plan B and what should be done with it? I should note that we did invite a representative from the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, to join our discussion, but they said they didn't want to send anybody. But you're invited to call, as I say, our number, 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. Let me introduce my guests. Alistair J. Wood is professor of medicine and pharmacology at Vanderbilt University School of Medicine in Nashville. He's also a former member of the FDA's Advisory Committee on Non-Prescription Drugs. He's on the phone here. Thanks for being with us today, Dr. Wood.
Pleasure.
Dr. David Hager is a part-time professor and consultant in infectious diseases and obstetrics and gynecology at University of Kentucky College of Medicine. He's also director of the University of Kentucky Affiliated Residency Training Program in Obstetrics and Gynecology for Central Baptist Hospital and a practicing OBGYN at the Women's Care Center in Lexington. He's a former member of the FDA's Reproductive Health Drugs Advisory Committee, and he joins us from Kentucky. Thank you for talking with us today, Dr. Hager.
Thank you for having me.
Vivian Lewis is a professor of obstetrics and gynecology and the director of the Division of Reproductive Endocrinology at the University of Rochester Medical Center in Rochester. She's currently serving on the FDA's Reproductive Health Drugs Advisory Committee. She joins us from WXXI in Rochester. Thank you for talking with us today, Dr. Lewis.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. Dr. Wood, let me begin with you. In an editorial in the New England, or sort of a commentary in the New England Journal of Medicine, it's titled A Sad Day for Science at the FDA. Can you give us an idea why you feel that way?
Well, because the FDA is charged with approving drugs for use in the United States based on their safety and efficacy. And this was a drug that had been reviewed by two advisory committees, which voted 23 to 4 to approve the drug for use over the counter. The FDA's own internal staff then reviewed the application and also recommended it for approval. And after all of that and all of the scientific literature which supports the safety and efficacy of this drug, the FDA then decided not to approve it for over-the-counter use, and the only other explanation is that this was a political decision. The reason that's a sad day is that although in this case both sides in the issue want to trumpet their involvement in the decision, in the usual setting, when drug companies, for example, are lobbying to have a drug approved or not approved, that will go on in secret, and we've always assumed that political pressure would not influence the agency, and now we find that it will.
Dr. Hager, do you agree?
Well, I understand what Dr. Wood is saying. However, I think that it wasn't really the safety and efficacy or actually effectiveness, real-world use, that was the concern, or at least the concern I had when I voted against approval. It was some of the other information that was lacking in the presentation, and I did not feel comfortable voting for approval at that time and encouraged them to gather those data in order to enhance the fund of information that was available. But I would agree with Dr. Wood that all of the data that have been presented and were presented at that time indicated that the drug was safe. There were just some unanswered questions that I felt needed to be answered.
Such as?
Well, I had several, and one was the lack of information in younger adolescent women. Only 4.4% of the enrollees in the actual use study, which was presented by the sponsor to the FDA and to the committees, were less than 16 years of age. And we were not given any information about the effect on access to medical care of younger women. What would this do to young women if they chose to use emergency contraception and then elected not to seek routine medical care? They didn't come in for screening for STDs. They did not come in for pap smears, HPV screening. They didn't come in to receive prescriptions for routine contraception, birth control pills, et cetera. And also, there was to be no age limitation whatsoever. We were told both by the sponsor and by the FDA that there would be no age limitation on the purchase of this medication over the counter. And so I felt that those pieces of information needed to be answered, the data needed to be gathered. And actually, if you look at the FDA's response to the sponsor, they gave them two options. One was to gather the data, which I think would have been the most prudent thing to do. The second thing option was to change the age of prescription, less than 16 or less than 17, whichever age you choose would be behind the counter and the other would be over the counter.
Let me just address that, if I may.
Yes, Dr. Wood, go ahead.
This is a really important issue. This is being presented as though there was some argument about this. In fact, every major professional organization, everyone, the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, the American Academy of Pediatrics, and the AMA itself, have endorsed over-the-counter emergency contraceptive use for all ages. The American Academy of Pediatrics, the premier pediatric organization, has just issued a statement strongly endorsing that. There's no question about the safety of the drug in adolescents. The issue of whether people don't come for medical care because they take drugs over the counter applies to every single drug that's available over the counter. If you have a headache and you take an aspirin for that drug, for that headache, you probably won't seek medical care for it. That's part of the process of going through the over-the-counter application. It's really important that we also address this issue of age, which I think is being raised as a straw man or a straw woman, if you like. Essentially, what's being said here is that every single person who gets emergency contraception over the counter in this country would have to be carded, whether you're 25 or whatever. And that, to me, is an attempt to intimidate women. It means that every woman would have to produce an identification that shows her age to somebody, a store clerk at Walgreens or wherever. And many poor women, many inner-city women, don't have a driver's license. They'll be unable to obtain this drug. So that's just a ludicrous suggestion.
Dr. Lewis,
if I could
also, go ahead, please.
Comment. I think that certainly we're all concerned about the welfare of teens and making sure that they have good access to medical care and that they use drugs safely. But there's never been any restriction based on age in terms of prescribing contraception. So I don't think that it quite makes sense to say in this particular instance we have to worry more about the safety of the drug. And to further support what Dr. Wood said, the American Academy of Pediatrics has come out with an excellent statement kind of detailing those factors.
Yeah, and I understand that, Vivian. As far as the national organizations that Dr. Wood mentions, but The fact of the matter is that at the present time in this country, oral contraceptives are prescription items. And therefore, that requires the individual to come in for evaluation of medical underlying medical conditions. I'm not arguing the safety of levonorgestrel or Plan B, but it does require that they come in. So Dr. Wood says, well, if they went to the pharmacy, they would have to offer some identification. I'm not involved with those guidelines, but when a patient comes to the office, they offer identification. So is that restrictive? Does the fact that we provide medical care and require identification of individuals when they come to the office restrictive for the provision of medical care? I don't think so. And all we're asking is that my concern is this. My concern is that a 10-year-old comes in and purchases EC over the counter. I don't think she's mature enough not only to necessarily know how to take the medication. And if you look at the label comprehension study, fully 70% of the low literacy group did not understand how to take the medicine, even though they got instructions, 33% overall. But not only might she not understand how to take it, but does she know what to do if it doesn't work?
Let's say we would agree that 10-year-olds wouldn't take it. What age limit would you put on it?
I don't know the answer to that, Dr. Wood. But I'm
this is Ira Flato. This is not Dr. Wood. I'm wondering. You said a 10-year-old. I don't see a druggist giving this to a 10-year-old over the counter. I just can't see that happening. So to try to find the worst case scenario doesn't help us any. We're going to come back. We have to take a break. So let's stay. Everybody, stay where you are. We're going to take a break and come back and talk lots more about Plan B and take phone calls. Don't go away. We'll be right back. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flato. We're talking this hour about the plans for Plan B, the over-the-counter, hopefully, according to some people, the prescription non-prescription drug for the morning-after pill. With my guests, Alistair Wood, W. David Hager, and Vivian Lewis, our number 1-800-989-8255. Let's see if we can go to the phones, get a call here. Jean in Madison. Hi, Jean.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Well, I guess my question, well, first I have a comment that Dr. Hager is, you could look anywhere and find that he would not prescribe roles to unmarried women in his own private practice, so he is not a credible guest as far as I'm concerned. But
is that true? Well, let me get...
That's absolutely not true, and that's part of the rumor that's been passed around the country by individuals like Gene, but... I prescribe birth control pills to single women who are sexually active every day.
Great. What's your age limit?
I don't have an age limit. I try to talk those young women into abstaining from sexual intercourse if they choose to be sexually active, and often their parents are with them. We talk about the situation and make a decision about the best treatment for that given individual.
Absolutely the best case scenario that I could think of, to have a parent involved with a child's health care, and that is what we're all looking for. If it were over the counter, would you say that a parent wouldn't take a 14-year-old into the drugstore to purchase this over the counter?
Yeah, Jean, I think that's a great point, and I really think it's a point that needs to be discussed, because my concern is only this. We don't know the answer to that, and the data that are available right now don't answer that question. If we could be assured that you or other parents would come in with their daughter or actually son, because males could purchase this medication and be counseling and involved with them, but we can't be assured of that. I'd like to have that information before I say that this should be approved.
Dr. Lewis, obviously this has been hashed out at advisory committee meetings, of these questions, and then voted on, and this has not been agreed to because it's been recommended to go ahead with this pill.
Yes, well, in fact, we didn't vote on any age restriction at the time. That wasn't one of the questions put before us. But in fact, a 14-year-old could go to a physician and request the medication without her parent if she's sexually active. So I don't know that that would necessarily restrict someone from using the medication. Certainly a 14-year-old could buy condoms without their parents' permission as well. None of us thinks that's a good thing. None of us wants sexually active teens who are not responsible to be participating in intercourse, but the fact is that some do, and you have to ask yourself whether it's better to have a teenage pregnancy, a teen who's not prepared to handle the demands of childbearing, or whether it's better to prevent it if the person recognizes that that is not what they intend to do, is have a child at this point.
And we actually have some data on that now. There are at least three studies that answer that question. Anna Glacier's study, published in Contraception out of Scotland, 16 to 29-year-olds showed no decrease in abortions when emergency contraception was available over the counter. The study by Tina Rain, published in the Journal of the American Medical Association in January of this year, showed that there was no decrease in pregnancy rate with advanced provision of emergency contraception. And there was also a study that her group did, published in 2000, that showed that the users of emergency contraception used less effective and less consistent contraception overall. So we do know some of the answers to those questions.
Right, but that's not what... Wait a minute. These studies were designed to show what the effect on use of regular contraception was, and they unequivocally showed that women were not more promiscuous when they had access to emergency contraception. They showed there was no increased high-risk sexual behavior when women had access to emergency contraception.
Right.
And they showed that all the other gargoyles that had been raised about this were not true. They were not powered to detect a difference in pregnancy rate. And of course they didn't show a difference in pregnancy rate given the numbers in the study. But clearly they didn't show an increase in all the awful outcomes that you've proposed, Dr. Hager. The second thing we need to talk about, which we've not talked about so far, is why emergency contraception should be available over the counter. The problem is that this is a therapy that's effective if it's taken within the first 72 hours. The efficacy decreases over time, so it's much more effective if taken within 24 hours. So imagine the scene. You discover you have unprotected sexual intercourse or a failure of your contraceptive, or you're raped, and you have to obtain emergency contraception. Right now, you have to call a doctor at 2 o'clock perhaps on a Saturday morning and find a doctor who's willing to prescribe contraception, emergency contraception for you. You have to get a prescription from that physician. You have to take it to a pharmacy, find a pharmacy that stocks emergency contraception. Only fewer than 50% of pharmacies, even in New York City, have emergency contraception available. And then you have to get it filled and you have to take the tablet. All of the time, the window of efficacy is closing. That's why it's so important that we have emergency contraception available to people that they can take rapidly. It's not a question of saying it's equally effective when obtained from a physician. It's not, because you can't get to a physician on a Friday or Saturday night.
Dr. Hager, do you prescribe Plan B to your patients?
I'm doing gynecology alone, so right now I'm not doing obstetrics, so my patient population is skewed age-wise. But regarding
I don't think my listeners understood that.
Yeah. Well, I'm not doing obstetrics, so my patient population, the age of my patient population is not necessarily the younger adolescent reproductive age population where Plan B might be prescribed, but I do
so
you, not.
So your patients are not 20, 30, 40, 50 years old?
Oh, well, I have some in that age range.
But do you prescribe it to those patients?
I do not prescribe Plan B.
Why
to
not?
My patients, because I still think that there is some question about the abortifacient nature, and I choose not to do that. But
would you prescribe it to anyone then? How could you prescribe it, sit on a committee and then have anyone take it if you don't prescribe it to your own patients, or advise anyone else to take it if you don't prescribe it to your own patients?
Because the decision that I made regarding Plan B had nothing to do with my own personal views about prescription. It had to do with the information or lack thereof that I felt needed to be answered. And the situation regarding advanced prescription is, I mean, this is a prescription item. It can be obtained by prescription, and individuals all over the place prescribe Plan B with advanced prescriptions. They give out prescriptions and say, if you need this, get it filled. So
access, people don't know they need it when they've been raped.
But no, I understand that. But in that situation, there are emergency departments and rape crisis centers and rape units in emergency departments where individuals can obtain emergency contraception.
Well, if I could interject here, I think it's definitely legitimate to include someone's views who has doubts about the mechanism of action of the medication on the advisory committee. However, I also think it's important to recognize that it is not fair to the patient to have to say you should go to the emergency room to obtain this medication. First of all, there's a steep fee for going to the emergency room. Secondly, you're going to sit and sit and sit behind people who have been victims of car accidents, people who are in shock, and so on. You could sit there for 12 hours or more waiting and then pay $100 or $200 just to get a prescription for a medication that should be available over the counter. And then, as Dr. Wood pointed out, you have to find a pharmacy that stocks it and is willing to give it. So I think it's legitimate to say you don't believe that you agree with the mechanism of action, but make it available, and that way people who don't want to take it because they have concerns about the way it acts are free not to take it. But those who feel it's a product that would be useful for them have better access to it.
But scientific consensus, just to clarify for listeners, is that this is a drug which, after all, is already in regular oral contraceptives, does not act as an abortifacient. It has no effect on an established pregnancy, for instance, and is not dangerous to the fetus. So although Dr. Hager may have doubts about it, that's not the scientific consensus.
Let me read what the FDA itself says how it works. It says, Plan B works like other birth control pills to prevent pregnancy. Plan B acts primarily by stopping the release of an egg from the ovary. It may prevent the union of sperm and egg. If fertilization does occur, Plan B may prevent a fertilized egg from attaching to the womb. If a fertilized egg is implanted prior to taking Plan B, Plan B will not work. 1-800-989-8255. Let's go to the phones to Christine in Columbus. Hi, Christine.
Hi. I just wanted to point out that the concerns that the physician had regarding the over-the-counter status, keeping people from coming in for routine exams and pap smears, is rather hypocritical when there's spermicides and other barrier forms easily sold over-the-counter without that concern. I think he's got a bias that he's not maybe admitting to himself.
Dr. Hager?
We're talking about the difference between a hormonal prescription medication and a barrier type of contraception. So the concern is related not just to the sexual activity aspect and using a barrier method of contraception or whatever is chosen. It has to do with the medical follow-up of individuals. And I'll go back to what Dr. Lewis said, and I'm certainly not interested in individuals having to pay more for medical care and having easing their access to medical care. But if they cannot go to emergency department, there are health departments, there are physicians I see patients where we don't charge them, where we accept minimal fees in order to get them in for access. And it is possible to have advanced prescriptions written and to have that medication available.
But you won't even do that for your own patients.
I choose not to do that for my own patients, but there are many physicians who do.
There are several news outlets that reported that in a sermon that you gave, you said you were asked by the FDA to write a minority report about Plan B. Is that true?
I was encouraged to write an opinion, a minority opinion.
And did you submit it to the FDA?
I sent a letter as a private citizen to the commissioner.
And who encouraged you?
I'm not at liberty to divulge that.
Well, you were on a public committee, were you not, for a public agency?
Yes.
You were under taxpayer money. Shouldn't we know who told you to do that?
Well, no, I don't think that you necessarily need to know that.
Why not?
Well, because I was asked in confidence about that, and I choose not to divulge that source.
Dr. Wood, if the FDA did succumb to political pressure on this, can that ever be shown or proved, do you think?
Well, I think it's clear it did succumb to political pressure. You know, the science here is unequivocal. And while I agree with Dr. Hager, or Dr. Lewis rather, that it's important to have all sides represented on advisory committees, Dr. Hager had the opportunity to argue his case vigorously at the advisory committee and was voted 23 to 4 that it against him. That's the way the system's supposed to work. A final check is provided by the FDA's own staff, and they too agreed with that. So, in the absence of any data being produced by the FDA to back their current position, one has to assume that this was a political decision.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. We're talking about Plan B this hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. And let's see if we can go to the phones and go to Sierra in Tallahassee, Florida. Hi, Sierra.
Hey, I've been listening to this the entire time, and you answered part of the question I had, which was how exactly does this work? Does it thicken the cervical mucus? Does it automatically start a period? Does it, you know, when you read the FDA, although I know that there is some confusion as to how exactly birth control pills work totally, but the one comment I have to make is you cannot legislate morality. You tried that. Look at Prohibition. That didn't work. You cannot change the way people behave with laws. It just doesn't work. And why people are still trying to do it, I don't understand.
All right, thanks for calling. 1-800-989-8255. Lisa in Illinois. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, how are you?
Fine.
I'm actually a family physician here in Illinois. I only have a second. Such an interesting conversation. I actually do prescribe Plan B, so I don't have the other, you know, you were talking about the hypocrisy of, you know, someone who doesn't prescribe it. I do prescribe it, and I'm one of the only doctors around my area who will prescribe it, but I still don't feel like it should be over-the-counter, not for any type of moralistic reasons, but I just strongly feel that the reason that I have young women and particularly teenagers coming to me to have their pap smears and get the education that they need is that they want oral contraceptives, they want to talk about these things and talk about Plan B even, and I really feel like if it's over-the-counter that they will just pick it up and not come to the doctor. If there was some mechanism where once they did pick something up over the counter like that, they were directed or they had, you know, some type of follow-up appointment with a physician, I may be able to support it. But even then, I worry that that's a medicine that should not be used if someone is already pregnant. And even after they use it, they could be pregnant. And I really feel like these women and girls need follow-up. I think the answer is not to make it over-the-counter, but rather to educate physicians that it's...
Well, I only have about a minute left, but doctor, what if they came in and had the counseling and they talked to you and they understood everything about the risks? Mm-hmm. And then wouldn't you say, okay, I think you know enough, you can go buy it on your own?
That's a good question. I hadn't thought about that. But, you know, in that case, you would be talking to someone about it. But if it's over the counter, it's available to anyone, including a lot of people who do not understand their own menstrual cycle, don't understand, you know, a lot. Girls at that age need a lot of counseling and education, and I don't think it's right to put such a serious medicine over the counter.
One last question. Dr. Wood, what do you think this is? Is it going to be held up for good now by the FDA, or where do we stand with this?
I think it's unlikely to be approved anytime soon, certainly given the political climate. I think that's a tragedy for American women. And just going back to the last speaker's point, while it's true that she can give counseling to the patients who come to her, as she rightly said, most of the patients in her area can't get access to it because the physicians that they go to don't prescribe Plan B. And I doubt that she prescribes it at 2 o'clock on a Friday night.
There's one other important point about that, Ira, and that is that in the University of Washington pharmacist study, the Washington State pharmacist study, 85% of the individuals who got emergency contraception over the counter were judged by the pharmacist to need medical follow-up. So it agrees with Lisa's statement.
We've run out of time. I want to thank my guest, Alistair Wood, professor of medicine and pharmacology at Vanderbilt, Vivian Lewis, professor of OBGYN at Rochester Medical Center in Rochester, University of Rochester, and David Hager, director of University of Kentucky Affiliated Residency Program in OBGYN. Our number 1-800-989-8255. We'll be right back after this break. Stay with us.